It's the Herb Doctor with Dr. Pete and Andrew Murray. You've got to tune to KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM, KMUE in Eureka at 88.1, KLAI in Laytonville at 90.3. We're on the web, kmud.org, and FM translator K258BQ in Shelter Cove at 99.5.
Welcome to this month's Ask Your Herb Doctor. My name's Andrew Murray. Well, it's 2020, folks. It's going to be a fantastic decade. I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to 2020. It's going to be a good year. Okay, so you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor, KMUD Garberville 91.1 FM. From 7:30 until the end of the show at 8 o'clock, you're invited to call in with any questions related to this month's subject of vibrations, frequencies, and cell repair and regeneration through sound and vibration. The program is a live program, like I said, from 7:30 to the end of the show at 8 o'clock. We'll open up the phone lines for people to call in. Dr. Raymond PhD is joining us again, and as he has done for the last 10 years, I think now, is a wealth of knowledge. And whilst I know he doesn't express himself as a, an expert on sound, he knows enough about a lot of different things that I know he can weigh in on the subject of some of the most interesting and recent 2019 and 2020 publications based on research that is accessible through the PubMed website, being done in a very interesting field of medicine. And some of the uses for sound and electrofrequency, magnetic spectrum type vibration is used in the treatment of cancer. So we've got an interesting article to open up a little bit later on. So just by way of introducing the show, my name is Andrew Murray. I run a business called Western Botanical Medicine. I've been a naturopathic doctor here for 23 years. We manufacture our own range of medicinal herb extracts and deal with a lot of people all over the nation, consulting about a wide range of health conditions, and has for the last 10 or just over years been very much working with Dr. Pete to get his insight onto what I thought was the way things were when I graduated in 1999. I did a four-year degree in herbal medicine in England, after a three-year degree in botany, and was taught by medical doctors and physiologists and endocrinologists and pathologists, and they all came from City Hospital in London and various other medical institutions, and were basically teaching the same kind of dogma, if you like. And I know Dr. Pete and I have opened up quite a few discussions based around the errant recapitulation of supposed facts, of which Dr. Pete's very able to expand and show the defects in the understanding and the dogma which has unfortunately guided medical decision, medical technology. But anyway, without further ado, let's just see if Dr. Pete's with us. Dr. Pete, you on?
Yep.
Yeah.
Hi.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us in this next decade. I want to put the question to you. I hope you'll be around for another decade.
I'm planning on it.
Yeah, good. Good. Okay, so for those of you perhaps who've never listened to the show before, you've not heard Dr. Pete. Dr. Pete, would you just outline your professional and academic background for people to understand where you're coming from?
I had a master's degree in humanities, and after about 10 years, went back for a PhD in biology, University of Oregon, 1972, on reproductive aging was my dissertation topic.
Okay, so reproductive aging. So you've been pretty intimately associated with all of the factors around reproduction and organized cell growth to maximize the organism's potential. I know having worked with you, especially surrounding things like neonatal health, children's health, and the kind of foods, which are very much a food-based scientist in terms of not buying into the fads of all the things that are thrown at us through supplements, but you're very much a kind of a very natural kind of approach to treating disease. And I know you don't really generally advocate a lot of supplements, but I know that progesterone is one of your pets, if you like, having you probably studied that a lot during your PhD in terms of its use as a factor in organized cell growth and anti-inflammatory processes.
Incidentally, some of my experiments had to do with the electrical behavior of tissue under the influence of progesterone, estrogen, prostaglandins, and so on.
Interesting. Okay, so we're going to get into that. So I don't know. Let's just hold that thought for a second. So I think I'm hopefully going to be able to prime you to bring that back up again. But you've always mentioned, and this is kind of a little bit off the side of the topic thrust, as it were, but you've always mentioned estrogen as being an excitotoxic molecule. And unfortunately, most women who are listening, or perhaps maybe the more educated ones that understand a little bit more about what you've taught over the last 30 or 40 years, probably understand estrogen as being a female hormone, and the whole hormone replacement therapy thing really pushed it as a pro-life hormone. You know, they want to say that it'll help your bone thinning stabilize. It's good for osteoporosis, as it were, and it's good for degenerative conditions, when actually it's a very hormone that is based and implicated in inflammation and excitotoxicity. So I was very, very excited to see the articles when I was looking for the material for today, or this evening's talk, basing it on sound, vibration, cell signaling. I'm going to get into a little bit later. I want to get into the kind of tuning forks, resonant frequencies, a little bit about Rife, although I know you've already said that you found it interesting, but you don't know too much on it, so I'm not asking you to be an expert or anything on that. But whilst I was looking through the paperwork, I saw a very interesting article on breast cancer, and the journal article actually wasn't one of the newer ones. But most of what I saw with sound and vibrations were actually in 2019 and 2020 publications. So I was pretty blown away. And I think this is becoming another resurging subject for people with science and academia are in the forefront to actually prove this now as being a modality. It's a little bit like the whole Tesla battery car thing, you know, coming into a fruition, hopefully to put the whole fossil fuel thing firmly under the under the rug and bring forward a new clean technology. But I find a lot of the articles that I see on PubMed, as much as I know you've said in the past, they are not exactly the best places to go, and there's a lot of corruption there, obviously, in any medical research, depending on who's funding it. But very interesting to find in this age that we're in, and definitely with the internet and computers at the forefront of our ability to search and index things, that people are actually picking up a lot of these things that would have been just put down to new age, just crystal dangling and, you know, just not given any scientific foundation upon which to voice their findings. But most of what I saw there in 2019 was fairly pretty cool research that's being done on things that I'm very happy to see. So this one particular article, even though it was a 2013 article, the others that I'd like to cover with you as we go through this, mainly 2019 and 2020 documents, and I'll give people a link for these if people want to go and search these themselves to find out what we're talking about. But this 2013 one, it was titled Low Intensity and Frequency Pulsed Electromagnetic Fields Selectively Impair Breast Cancer Cell Viability. So this was an article of which the abstracts just go through the introduction, methods, results and conclusion. But essentially, they were saying that this pulse electromagnetic field therapy was a very good treatment for breast cancer. It didn't affect normal tissues. It was non-invasive, obviously, and could be potentially combined with existing anti-cancer treatments. Now, I think they have to put that in there anyway as a kind of a caveat to not displace the conventional treatment, because I think that's the dominant paradigm. But just to say that actually they found a good reduction in breast cancer growth using these pulse frequencies. And hopefully we'll get into this in a little bit as we go on. But do you have anything to add to what was used here as a kind of low intensity, low frequency vibrational output that directly affected these cells?
They weren't in that experiment paying attention to the effects of frequency. So it was just really giving some kind of excitation to the cells. But other people, like the Rife tradition, have been trying to identify particular frequencies that are more effective at either exciting or calming the cells. In the 60s, people were trying to use direct current to control cancer growth. Professor Johns Hopkins published an article saying that he had regressed mouse mammary tumors just using the application of direct current polarization.
So applying current, but not a
not pulsing.
Huh. Okay.
It's known that cancer is electrically excited. Right. It's like a wound that is stuck in an electrically excited, negatively charged condition.
Okay, and as much death and morbidity that cancer is responsible for, cancer cells are not exactly strong. They're pretty weak, aren't they? They are very fragile in a lot of ways, and so I think some of the work that's been done, either vibrational or electrically, certainly has validity in disrupting that cell stability, because they don't particularly have very stable membranes in terms of the normal architecture of the cell.
And being electrically charged and excited, I think, makes them more susceptible to vibrating energy fields, such as in that experiment.
Uh-huh. Okay, so what do you... When I started looking at this, I saw that most of the articles that I pulled out that I want to just go through with you using this pulsed electromagnetic fields, most of these, and they were always, obviously, because that's how we do it now, quoting these in hertz, whereas before 50, 100 years ago, they were called, maybe a little bit earlier than that even, they were calling them cycles per second before they termed it hertz. And before that, they didn't even really understand or have a concept of the second before about 1830, which I found that was quite interesting, that most time is, well, originally measured by the sun or the passage of the sun, and that's how people measured time, given that that's a celestial thing that it transcends our earthly fixation on the planet. But that once they had devised this method for measuring time and then came up with the second, then the cycles per second and the hertz became a scientific, if you like, valid measurement of frequency. And then the whole industry, if you like, sprung up around this, and then getting later on into solfeggio tuning and what most musicians that I've spoken to that have said, oh yeah, we just tuned to 440 hertz now, and it's not the way it was. And if you really like Gregorian music or Baroque music, it was definitely not 440, it would have been 432 hertz, and how there's a subtle change in that. But getting back to frequencies and how a specific frequency can affect a cell, given that we are 90-something plus percent water, all of the molecules in our body, and not even the watery ones, even the more kind of solid cells, have membranes that are fluid and can and do respond very much to vibration. And that's something that we have just been part of, you know, growing up and evolving. And we're subjected to the sun's ultraviolet and infrared and all those spectrums that we kind of live with. And I think in going through some of the other discussion, I wanted to hopefully bring your knowledge out on with the current deployment of 5G and how there is all these, you know, fairly worldwide protests about 5G and then pulling down 5G towers, and this, you know, having to bring up these big committees to discuss this because there's such an outrage at what could potentially be a very disruptive technology in some ways, that we are very much organismic and sensitive to light and vibration, light being frequency, and all of these things, whether it's photons of light or it's energy, whether this energy is high energy, obviously the radiation, which is very bad for us, but these very low frequency electromagnetic fields are even lower than the kind of background. They said that the Earth kind of resonates at about just under eight hertz. They were using frequencies between 1 and 80, I think. And some of these were more down in the sort of 9s, 10s, 12s, 13 and 14 hertz. And actually showing that people were getting benefit from this. And there's the whole breast cancer article introduction. You were saying again that they weren't so much focusing on the frequency of it, or the...
in the 60s, doctrine, there are still people arguing that cell phones aren't causing brain damage or cancer and so on. But that argument that cells are pretty immune to various frequencies started back in the late 40s when radar was accidentally killing people who stood in front of the radar antenna. And the authority opinion at that time was that it was only by overheating your brain or other organs that electromagnetic injury could harm you. And in the 1960s, that was the dogma that neither sound nor electromagnetic energy below a certain frequency and energy could have any effect on the units of the cell, such as chromosomes or mitochondria. And a person was working with muscle cells in culture and measuring the activity of ATPase, which controls the disposition of energy in the cell. And they found that, I think it was the pitch of 440, which was very powerful at activating that muscle enzyme. And they showed that the conventional theory of the cell was impossible for that low frequency, moderately low energy. That the dogma says that the energy concentration per micron or any unit of space is too low to do such things as causing chemical changes. But the person demonstrating the effect showed that, in effect, the cell structure was acting as an antenna, concentrating, gathering energy from several microns of space and concentrating it so that it could act on the enzyme. That's the essential difference. At that time, the conventional opinion was that it would be impossible to make a magnetic resonance imaging device because of that same idea that the cell is organized randomly. But it took the interaction between Gilbert Ling and his organized water explanation of cell function, and Raymond Damadian, who realized that if Gilbert Ling was right about how water behaves, so you can make pictures of the water in cells electromagnetically. And so his invention of the MRI device really changed the possibility of explaining cell function.
Okay. All right. So you mentioned, I just want to quickly put this out there before I just let people know how to call into the show. Yeah, you mentioned that in the 50s and 60s that was happening, and that just triggered me to think about all the bomb testing and how they were trying to tell us all that the atomic bombs were completely harmless and how people could stand in front of them and they wouldn't get any negative effects from it. So they were saying the very same thing about the low frequency, low energy, although the atomic bomb was the opposite end of the spectrum. It was very high intensity gamma rays and it was very, very damaging. But they really wanted us to try and cover that whole thing up, the whole radiation industry, and that everything that we've got now, from x-rays to PET scans and CAT scans, has all come from that, and it's still being covered up and just made harmless, as it were.
Yeah, that's part of the reason that they deny that Gilbert Ling had an accurate description of the cell, because if his picture of the cell is right, then radiation, electromagnetic energy, and so on, is very relevant to cell function.
Okay, let me just let people know how to reach us here. So you're listening to Ask Your Herb Doctor, KMUD Garberville, 91.1 FM. The number here from 7:30 on, if you'd like to call in with questions related or unrelated to the evening subject of vibration, cell signaling, and everything surrounding sound and vibration as a modality for treatment. The number here is 707-923-3911. So again, 707-923-3911. Okay, so Dr. Pete, that the first article then I read out, the breast cancer treatment, selectively damaging breast cancer cells, selectively leaving regular tissue unchanged, was done with a frequency from 20 to 50 hertz, and they used 30 to 90 minute exposures. And said that these were the optimum parameters for selective cancer cell killing activity. So that was pretty interesting. I don't know how much further. I didn't look at cell death from breast cancer any further, because I was looking at lots of different types of treatment to different types of pathology that would be mitigated through sound. The next one I was going to ask you about was bone regeneration. I found a lot of different abstracts and articles supporting this. Now, one of them here, 2019 article in the Journal of Clinical Medicine, was translational insights into extremely low-frequency pulsed electromagnetic fields for bone regeneration after trauma and orthopedic surgery. Now, if you open the link up, I'm not saying you have it, but if people want to find out what these are, when you open the link up, there's lots of information there showing how people with different traumas and surgeries that were done were treated with sound and how this improved osteoblastic activity. So the actual, what I understand, at least at this point in time, about bone building and bone breaking organs within the bone, so the osteoblasts build it and the osteoclasts break it down for remodeling, that this sound actually had a very specific effect on the osteoblasts to improve bone mineralization and bone formation and structure. So that was pretty interesting. Another 2019 document. Have you heard of, and I know this kind of probably plays a little bit into ultrasound, but I'm not actually sure of the frequencies that ultrasound works at.
For treating things, they use anything from 50,000 to 100,000, but the imaging is around a million cycles per second.
50,000 to 100,000 hertz?
That is a very effective wound treatment. Around, I think, 1970 or earlier, someone discovered that putting ultrasound on infected tonsils caused them to recover and become normal, uninflamed. And that gradually, over the next 10 or 20 years, they found that bone healing was accelerated and soft tissue wound healing was accelerated, similar to what happened in the tonsil. And part of that is thought to be the activation of cell regenerating signals such as nitric oxide and estrogen that accelerate stem cell growth and multiplication, the early stages of healing.
Yeah. Okay, so if I just, I quickly actually have this article here in front of me, so I just wanted to, it's like I said, it was a 2019 article, and they said that here, being used in the treatment of acute bone fractures and bone fracture non-unions, osteotomies, spinal fusion, osteoporosis, and osteoarthritis, and saying that these studies favored the use of extremely low-frequency pulse electromagnetic fields, and saying that they wanted to establish indication-oriented treatment regimens and to understand more the underlying mechanisms in the sense of the cell pathways and the events that are triggered. So some of the other articles that I've got that I wanted just to outline here break down in pretty fine detail exactly what pathways these things are affecting. And people that are listening probably recognize the words interleukin, prostaglandins, and these other signals of excitation and toxicity and inflammation. A lot of what was happening with this sound was that it was blocking a lot of what we understand as these pro-inflammatory pathways and allowing either free radical quenching of this kind of excited state during inflammation and trauma, or was having another indirect anti-inflammatory effect.
Imaging of bone density or osteoporosis can be done with ultrasound. You can tell the strength of a bone as well as its density if you use ultrasound. And since ultrasound stimulates bone repair, it would be reasonable if doctors would evaluate aging women's bones using ultrasound. But they x-ray them, and x-rays actually weaken the bone and accelerate osteoporosis. So it would be a good change of technology to use to switch over to ultrasound. A friend of mine who was for a year or more had liver enzyme elevation and signs of hepatitis. cystitis or developing cirrhosis, had a very prolonged ultrasound examination of her liver, and a couple of weeks later went back for another exam, and her liver had completely recovered. I suspect it was from that half an hour or so of looking around with an ultrasound imaging device.
Yeah,
was that related healing?
The mechanism by which that would have had an anti-inflammatory effect. I guess if we just look at something like hepatitis as an inflammation of the hepatocytes, inflammation quenching activity then of ultrasound would be a relative positive mechanism by which that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I know you've mentioned in the past that ultrasound is just generally a good healing modality, whether it's for bones or tissue, soft tissue, or even yeah. Actually, let's have a look here. I think go on.
I think the only place it shouldn't be used is around the head because
okay.
It tends to emulsify tissue if it's too energetic. And
right.
You don't want emulsified brain cells.
White matter, no. Okay, we do have somebody who has called in at this point in time. So let's just begin this decade's questioning with this next caller. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from and what's your question?
Hi, I'm from Texas, and I have two questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
One, do you think meditation is safe if you're trying to lower breathing rate and increase CO2?
Mm-hmm.
Or can it have bad effects, like increasing serotonin or something like that?
Dr. Pete, meditation, obviously we all think about meditation as being relaxing, carminative, regenerating, but what the gentleman's saying about CO2...
I think most people tend to... hyperventilate too much, and if you can just relax and stop hyperventilating, you retain more CO2, and that has an anti-inflammatory everywhere in the body.
Yeah. So you'd advocate meditation, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, caller, I think you had two questions. That was the first one, or?
Yeah, that was the first one. And do you know what could help to reduce the need for sleep? Aside from increasing CO2, because that basically helps everything.
Did you catch that, Dr. Pete? I missed it.
No, not the whole.
Yeah, say that again, please.
Do you know what things could help to reduce the need for sleep?
Oh, to reduce the need for sleep.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, how much sleep are you getting, and what do you want to reduce it to? Because I know Dr. Pete definitely advocates a good 10 hours.
If you're not getting into the deepest phase of sleep, called slow wave sleep or deep sleep, your tissue isn't being repaired adequately, and so you need more hours of it. And so if you do things that will deepen your sleep, then you can reduce it to the normal 6 to 8.5 hours. Thyroid hormone and vitamin D are two of the most important things for maintaining deep sleep.
Okay. And can vitamin D increase serotonin and worsen sleep, or is it just a matter of getting calcium to counter that?
Serotonin and histamine are both brain excitatory signals. And that's why antihistamines are used for improving sleep. Both anti-serotonin and antihistamine drugs do improve sleep, but you can do the same thing with good nutrition, lots of calcium, vitamin D, and thyroid.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, now... some antihistamines obviously are sleep-inducing, correct? Because they purposely make these non-drowsy producing antihistamines. Do you think there's any difference in the mechanism by which they're being?
Well, histamine is basically an inflammation signal, and insomnia, you are having, in effect, an inflamed brain, and... you can quiet it by getting the energy production up with thyroid and sugar and all of the nutrients, but the antihistamine chemicals are everything that works in a different direction from adrenaline. Adrenaline is antihistamine, but it is also excitatory, and so insomnia usually involves both adrenaline and antihistamine. The adrenaline is attempting to turn off the histamine, but if you get your energy up, you turn off both of them and let the brain relax.
Right. Now, so let's be clear about that. So relax and relaxation is not negative. I just want to make sure people understand this. It allows your brain to relax. That's exactly what thyroid hormone will do through the correct utilization of sugar. And then when you said that during the nighttime is when most inflammation of the brain will happen, and this is because of a lowered energy state, adequate thyroid and adequate sugars prior to sleep or in the pre-6 hours to sleep and or during the nighttime will keep those inflammatory mediators down and reduce that inflammation.
And most aging changes occur during the hours of sleep and darkness.
Yeah. Because yeah, you said darkness is not good for you, obviously. It's something we can't avoid, perhaps, if we're in bed at night time with the lights off in a dark place. But the dark is not good for us. The light is actually what's very energetically stimulating for us and supportive, etc. Okay, we have another caller on the air. So let's get this next caller on the air. Where are you from, caller, and what's your question?
Hi, I'm from McKinleyville.
Hey, what's your question?
Well, I have a question about infrasound. We were just embattled with a wind factory that proposed a whole bunch of wind power turbines.
Yeah.
And the proponent denied that there was any effect to what's called infrasound, the sound produced by these turbines that are sure. below audible range.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts or information regarding biological effects of infrasound.
I think cell culture gives an insight to what might be happening. The infrasound frequencies are something around 50 per second, 30 per second, or even as low as 10 per second. But if you're growing cells in culture, they always lose some of their properties that they had in situ in the organism. And one of the tricks to make cell culture more lifelike is to give it some kind of pulsation, because cell physiology depends on the fact that the blood is rhythmically pulsing through the system. And the pulse rate is in the infrasonic frequency, and there are many other frequencies that every cell in the body normally receives stimulation, nervous pulses, as well as blood heartbeat pulsations.
So, thank you. I take from that, then, you would expect there to be physiological effects on a constant infrasound.
I don't know that anyone has clearly demonstrated it, but you can use equivalent pulsations to show that you are changing the cell physiology in vitro.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Corey. Interesting question. I know there's definitely been protest groups that have sprung up around wind farm sites and potential wind farm sites. I know England, parts of Norfolk in the east of the country there have had a fair amount of wind farms because it's so flat and so windy. But yeah, interesting question about infrasound. Well, thanks for explaining that, Dr. Pete. Well done. Okay, the number here if you live in the area is 707-923-3911. The lines are open now until the end of the show at 8 o'clock. Dr. Raymond Pete is joining us on the show, and we're discussing vibrations, cell signaling, resonant harmonies, and healing frequencies, although we haven't really got into too much of that at this point in time. But very interesting questions. Anyway, good. Dr. Pete, before the next caller comes in, I'm sure there'll be some more callers, but I wanted to just bring out some of the parameters in which these 2020, this is a 2020 article here, so it's very new, very current, and I think all the time there are more and more descriptive processes to explain how, and I think scientists basically are committed to needing to explain in full detail. And I think that's great because, I mean, with detail comes disclosure. With disclosure comes the possibility of reaching some novel idea that might bring us into a 21st century appreciation of good health rather than the old paradigm of radiation and cutting things out and really not recovering very well. Actually, before I start, I think the lights have started flashing here, so let's make sure that we don't cut people off. Yeah, we've got one more caller. So, caller, you're on the air, and where are you from? What's your question?
Hi, I'm from Berkeley. I have an appointment next week to start my interferon for my hepatitis C, but I had a very thorough ultrasound on my liver to find that out. So should I ask them if I don't need the hepatitis C? I don't want to go through the interferon.
Really?
I'm hoping
you said interferon.
Maybe that
are they still...
the ultrasound would cure me.
Well, I guess first things first, are they still use? I didn't think I thought they'd stopped years ago, 3 or 5 years ago, using interferon because it was so brutal.
Oh, okay, then I don't know what they're going to give me. I don't know what the treatment is. Yeah. I'm going to find out on next week.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's interferon. But Dr. Pete, I know what you're saying here about ultrasound and hepatitis, and do you want to speak to that?
Not in a short time like this.
Okay. Have you? The only thing I think I would say to the person here that's called in about this potentially. I don't know how severe your hepatitis is, what parameters they've used to assess how much damage you may or may not have received. I know people are so different in their presentation. Some people just don't even know they've got it. Their labs look fine. They feel fine. Some people are crippled with it. So I don't know about your situation. I think what I would say to you is that if your blood work doesn't look bad and you don't feel bad and you are relatively old, sounds to me like you're dealing with it okay, but it's kind of personal question they'd be asking you about your previous labs, your state of health, etc., to make a valid call on what you would best do.
Okay, I'm 60 years old.
Was that 60 or 50?
60.
Okay, yeah. All right, and do you know what your lab values for your inflammatory markers are for your AFP?
No, I have no idea. They just said it wasn't very bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's it's a very personal call. I know people have gone both routes, unfortunately. I know people that have had, they had the old interferon treatment. They failed it. They wound up actually with cirrhosis, portal hypertension. They died from esophageal variceal bleeding. And it was terrible. I know other people that have had hepatitis C for 50 years and they're absolutely fine, even though they've got high liver enzymes, which seem to implicate them in liver inflammation and damage. And I know people that have got hepatitis, they've got perfectly normal enzymes. So it's a very widely presenting disease, if you want to call it a disease. And I know, Dr. Pete, you're almost on the fence as to whether or not it's actually a virus or whether it's actually... RNA that's leaked from cells from prior traumas.
I think the test to identify it has done more harm than the virus itself, because of the kind of desperate attitude that they take with things like interferon. I think people who probably wouldn't have had any problem if it hadn't been diagnosed, have been injured by some of the treatments they get.
Yeah. Actually, on the point of this subject, I know years back when I'd questioned you for a couple of patients that I'd spent time with and knew personally, was on a kind of more personal level with them. You said, didn't you? I thought you said that ribavirin, which I think was one of the treatments along with interferon, that was a standard treatment. was not actually that bad. I think one of those, and I don't think it was interferon. You always said interferon was like massively inflammatory and very negative on the system, but ribavirin actually might not have been a bad compound to try. But
yeah, I think it's less harmful.
Yeah, okay. All right. I don't know if that helps you in any way, caller, but what I would do, if I was in your shoes, I would definitely assess your labs and assess yourself. I mean, how do you feel?
I feel really good. I feel really good. But, yeah. Okay, also one more question. What about the hydrogen peroxide, the strong hydrogen peroxide that you do those drops?
Say that again. Hydrogen peroxide?
You do treatment with hydrogen peroxide, like 30 drops a day.
Oh, no, you're not talking about MMS, are you? The miracle mineral supplement that's actually bleach, which is
No. It's actually hydrogen peroxide, and you can buy it at Daisy's. It's a human strength or whatever.
Mm. Well, Dr.
And you start out like one drop a day and go up to 30
drops.
Yeah,
that sounds just like MMS, which is actually the same sodium hypochlorite, which is regular household bleach. It was a fad, and I can't believe it's still on the internet. It's absolutely all over it, and I'm kind of amazed that it's still going and it's still got such a strong following. But you'll find testimonials about this, that, and the other on it, and it starts off at one drop a day and ends up with however many drops, and there's people writing testimonials about how it's done this and done that, and it's kind of unbelievable, really. But I would say that I would not get involved with it. Dr. Pete, have you heard about the MMS? It's like...
There was a study in Italy that identified it as a probable carcinogen.
Right. Yeah. So I would not go down that route, ma'am.
I sure got a lot out of this call from you guys. It was great. Yeah. And thank you so much.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Okay, Happy New Year to you. Okay, if anybody else wants to call in, we've got 14 minutes, so we've got one more caller here, but the number in the air, if you're in or out of the area, it doesn't matter where on planet Earth you are, it's 707-923-3911. 707-923-3911, and let's take this next caller. You're on the air? Call away
Dr.
from?
Pete,
what's your question?
I was diagnosed with osteoporosis 10 years ago.
Could you turn your radio down, ma'am?
I'm turning 66 in a couple of days, you know. And supposedly I have an osteopenic spine, whatever that is, a femoral neck that is osteoporotic in a total osteoporotic hip.
Yeah.
However, I feel fine, you know. I do. I just walked 44 miles to get my tooth extracted from Shelter Cove the other day.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, ma'am, I guess first things first, before we let Dr. Pete answer
and
it, he'll have some...
the vibrational thing. I'd like to talk about pulse waves and, you know, I'm a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in music therapy.
Sure.
And pulse sonar waves are able to help bone growth.
Sure are. I've got articles right in front of me, man. That...
I do believe it because, you know, I've been studying music my entire life. I have a degree from Catholic University of America.
Could you turn your TV down? It's on in the background.
It's not my TV, it's my radio.
Your radio, yeah. If you could turn
that
down.
I like to hear what's going on, you know.
Sure.
And I am not deaf, actually, but, you know, I can hear things and talk at the same time. Here, I don't have a TV. I've never had a TV in my entire life.
Okay, if you could turn the radio down, that would help a lot.
It's down now.
Thank you. So, Dr. Pete, I know you know a lot about a lot of things, and osteoporosis is something I've questioned you on recently, but...
And I also have Hashimoto's hypothyroidism.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. That goes hand in hand with osteoporosis, ma'am.
Yes, so, but mine's genetic from being Northern Italian.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not too sure about the relevance of that, but Dr. Pete, go ahead.
Vitamin K is very important, along with vitamin D and calcium intake. Mm. Vitamin K prevents the removal of calcium from the bone and keeps it out of the soft tissues. The combination is much more effective than either one alone.
Okay, so they give vitamin K, calcium, and D.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm perfect. Okay, well, let's just see if any other callers are going to be calling in here in the last 9 minutes or so before we wrap the show up. Once again, 707 923-3911, and Dr. Pete is joining us once more this decade. So getting back to, until the lights go off here, but getting back to some of the measurements by which they support the abstracts that I've looked at. This one particular abstract here was showing that exposure to a cytokine production by lipopolysaccharide, which we've heard and discussed before in the past, that this compound LPS is responsible for inflammation. Cells in this pathway, the pathway of the inflammation, basically adenyl cyclase and phospholipase, protein kinase C, and several other protein kinases here were seemingly modulated by these sound waves, and they're saying that this is evidence of why this pulsed electromagnetic field therapy had such a significant effect on inflammation and quelling inflammation, because it's directly interrupting these signal pathways that normal inflammation is involved in.
I think normal activity has some of those effects, anti-inflammatory effects. If you're forced into inactivity, you develop generalized inflammation in probably all of the tissues, and free activity, work that is productive using your muscles, walking, for example, rather than sitting, the normal activity of muscles lowers the stress hormones and increases the constructive hormones, such as progesterone and DHEA and testosterone. And normal activity in itself is an anti-inflammatory process. And I suspect that these certain frequencies are imitating the normal rhythm of proper activity.
Cool. Okay, we do have another caller who's waiting here. So, caller, you're on the air. Where are you from, and what's your question?
Hi, my name's Julie, and I'm from Laytonville.
Hi, Julie.
My question is, I have fibromyalgia, and I'm trying to navigate through this still. I've had it for 10 years. But I find that when I get into a big city and I'm around a lot of power lines and stuff like that, I start feeling a little not well.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know if there was like any relationship between those two things.
Well, Dr. Pete, your understanding of fibromyalgia, I know, is a little different from the current medical normal model of it, but...
I think a lot of doctors are coming around to recognize the importance of hormone balance, a good thyroid function, vitamin D, and keeping up the constructive hormones or steroids like progesterone, testosterone, and DHEA.
Okay.
And especially as you're female, I mean, I don't mean this in any negative way, but because you're exposed in an unopposed way after your menstruation has stopped to estrogen, that is very important for you to make sure you get adequate progesterone, because it's the antagonist of the inflammatory estrogen. And that in fibromyalgia, no doubt that estrogen excess or estrogen dominance certainly has a role to play in the tired, waterlogged muscles, of which estrogen is a main cause.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm 63 now, so I don't have too many of those episodes.
You don't, but you don't have any way to combat the estrogen you're still producing. Every cell in your body is still manufacturing or can manufacture and secrete estrogen, but your ovaries no longer function, and so therefore you're not getting progesterone exposure, which is very important to offset that.
Okay.
And which is part and parcel of the osteoporosis question. I was also wondering, but not to say to Dr. Pete that we didn't mention, progesterone as a... Yeah, anyway, so carry on.
Cortisol is a bone destroyer, and progesterone is the main antagonist of cortisol.
Okay. So is there a book or something that I can get on this subject that you guys are talking about that you would recommend?
You haven't written one yet, Dr. Pete, about it, have you? We've talked about it a lot over 10 years, but nothing's materialized at this point in time. But Dr. Pete, what I would say to you, ma'am, is that at the end of the show, I'll give out Dr. Pete's website. He's got plenty of articles, actually, surrounding just what you're talking about. Although a lot of it is, for the sake of it, very science-based, and some of it may be a little hard for a novice to grasp, it's very well grounded in science, and so therefore it's very easy to catch the thrust of what he's saying. And certainly you can find out more information if you're on the internet about some of those concepts, precepts, and directions that you get taken in.
Good deal. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, we got one more caller. I think this will probably be the last caller before we wrap up the show. But caller, you're on the air. And what's your question? Where are you from?
Oh, I'm a local person. And I believe it was Helga Clark that wrote The Cure for All Cancers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if the doctor approves of the device that she created to, you know, tone out certain bacterial frequencies. I can hang up now.
I think she used just a simple low-voltage direct current stimulator, and that device can be used productively, but I don't think she understood enough to use it productively.
Yeah, interesting. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, so I don't know, maybe we can squeeze one more in if somebody wants to call in. It's 707-923-3911. Otherwise, I'm sure we've got enough to carry on with here for a couple of minutes to let people know how they can reach Dr. Pete. I think probably Dr. Pete, I don't see the lights flashing here, will say thank you very much for your time this month. Look forward to next month. Obviously, we, as usual, but we didn't get into as much as I thought we might do. So we've got material for next month if you're available. I'd love to carry on the subject. It's definitely very interesting.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so for those people who've listened to the show this evening and or listened to this on the audio archives or on the web, Dr. Pete's web address is www.raypeat.com. He's got a huge list of articles that have been written that are fully referenced, scientific articles that you would expect to see in any good journal, fully referenced for the things that he's saying. So it's not just his opinion. There's many, many articles from all sorts of different pathologies. So go take a look at his website. Like I said, a lot of it's very science-based, so maybe a little bit tough chewing for some people to get through it, but nonetheless, what we need is good science to underpin a good direction to go in, because I don't think the medical model we're using at this point in time is a particularly good model. It's certainly fairly damaging in some cases and does not really tolerate too much criticism about it. So anyway, what we do here on this show once a month from the third Friday of every month from 7 till 8 p.m. is discuss alternative treatments, alternative approaches, and indeed bring up some old past research that's been done that may either be revived in the light of current knowledge or just because it's become forgotten, is just valuable to bring it up again to make sure people recognize that there is and has been and still is answers that are there and available, so that people don't have to go down one particular route to get treated for a disease. It's not always one pill works for everybody. Obviously, it's very far from that, and I would encourage everybody to do their own research. There's plenty of alternatives out there. And like that lady who called in with hepatitis, you know, obviously, if she is close to cirrhosis and she's dying and there's nothing else that can be done, obviously there's a potential treatment for her, which, you know, in the light of current research, seems to show some fairly significant results. I won't say it doesn't, but obviously you got to understand it in the context that Dr. Pete understands things in. So it's not the last thing to do. It's not the first thing to do, perhaps, but it'd be the one of the last things to do if everything else has failed. Anyway, so my name's Andrew Murray. I run a business called Western Botanical Medicine. I produce herb extracts of medicinal plants. I was trained in Europe, graduated in England. And we do what we love. We've been doing it over 20 years now. So all the best to everybody out there who's tuned into the show, who maybe supports our products and our business. Our whole aim is to help you naturally. Anyway, thanks for your time, and until next month, Happy New Year.